We're on Kuf Nun Vav Amid Aleph, eight lines down, the fourth last word on the line where it says, Amar of Nachman. Yesterday we discussed the halacha that the Rabbanan made an enactment that an orphan who inherited his father's lands may not start selling those lands. He can't start doing business with the real estate until a certain age. We had two opinions. One opinion was 18, the other opinion was 20. That is, even though generally speaking, this person was already considered a legal adult by the age of 13. In halacha, when he becomes an adult, in the case of a boy, when he turns 13, and once he grows to Cyrus, to pubic hairs. Nevertheless, the Rabbanim were concerned that this youth might be irresponsible with his father's lands. They said, if to wait till 18 or 20, depending on which opinion. On this general subject, the Gemara brings a teaching from Rav Nachman and Rav Shmuel. Amar Rav Nachman and Rav Shmuel. Halacha is, even though the youth in question has turned the age of bar mitzvah or bas mitzvah, still, regarding the following halachas, we have to check, we have to make sure that this youth has the two pubic hairs, which marks the onset of halachic adulthood. And here are those halachas. Bodkin, we examine, we check for the two pubic hairs, l'kiddushin. If this person wants to get married, do a halachic kiddushin, which is only possible by adults. Let's say you have a 13-year-old boy and a 12-year-old girl. You want to do kiddushin. Halacha is we do not automatically assume that they have the shtei saros. Rather, we have to check. We have to verify that, and then we would allow them to do the kiddushin. Of course, halachic marriage has very serious ramifications. Therefore, we have to do bedika and legerushin. Also, if a young person wants to do a divorce, the Gemara will ask, well, we probably already checked that out by the kiddushin. So we'll see about that. But the Gemara says, since a husband has to be a legal adult to do a divorce, to hand his wife a get, we have to first ascertain that indeed he is an adult, that he grew this day asaros. And we would need to conduct such an examination for allowing them to do chalitza. Chalitza refers to a situation where a married man died without any children. The Torah says, a surviving brother is a mitzvah to marry the widow. If it's not practical, the Torah says the woman's widow cannot remarry until they go through the ceremony of chalitza. So if Nachman and Meshul says there too, we have to make sure, we have to verify that in fact these people are adults, otherwise they're not qualified to do the chalitza ceremony. Ulimiyunin. Checking for the saras, for the pubic hairs, is also relevant to the halacha of miyun. And miyun refers to a situation where a minor girl got married, and specifically, not where her father married her off. Let's say her father had died. And therefore, it's a situation where her marriage is only recognized by the Rabbanan. The Rabbanan enacted that there should be a system of marriage, even if the father died, even though she's a minor, for her protection. But since the marriage status in that situation is only recognized by the Rabbanan, and therefore, you know, make the rules here, and they said, in this situation, it's not necessary, should they want to end the marriage, to give her a divorce document. Rather, the girl simply declares before the court that I refuse this husband, I don't want to be married to him anymore, and then the marriage is null and void. Now, that's assuming that she is still a minor. As long as she's still a minor, so this whole marriage has a rabbinic status, the halacha is she can do miyun and she could simply refuse him in court. But once she becomes a legal adult, she's 12 and she has the two saros, miyun is no longer applicable. So if Nachman and Shmuel teaches, if a 12-year-old girl who was in this rabbinic marriage situation came to court and said, I want to do miyun, we would not allow the miyun unless we can verify that she does not have two saros. The only way she'd be able to do miyun is if she's not an adult yet. So if we examine and she doesn't have the two pubic hairs, then fine, she could do the miyun, otherwise she can't do the miyun. Rather, her husband would have to give her a get, like the regular system. Nachman and Shmuel then says, "V'limchor b'nechzei aviv." As regards the halacha we learned about yesterday, selling land of his father that he inherited from his father, the halacha is even if this orphan is 13 and has the two saros, he still may not sell his father's land. That shehei ben esrim. Nachman and Shmuel goes like the opinion, and the minimum age to do real estate business with the father's lands is 20. The Gemara now analyzes some of Nachman and Shmuel's rulings. First of all, the Gemara takes a look at this case of Gerushin. Nachman and Shmuel said that before A young man can go ahead and divorce his wife. We have to do a bedikah. We have to check that he has the two saras to make sure he's an adult and therefore qualified to do a divorce. The Gemara wonders, though, that obviously we're talking about a young man who is married. He did a kiddushin. How did he do a kiddushin? Must be they had verified that he was an adult, and so he was able to do a kiddushin to get married to begin with. So the question is, v'kivin de badakna l'kiddushin, being that he already had an examination, they already checked to make sure he has two saras to enable him to get married, l'gerushin l'mali. Why do we require another examination now by the divorce? We've already established that this person, this man, is an adult. The Gemara answers that Shmuel's ruling about the gerushin would apply in a specific case. Namely, lo nitzracha ella liyibum. Shmuel's ruling is needed only for a case where the way this couple had initially gotten married was not through a regular marriage, but through a yibum marriage. As we mentioned earlier, a situation where this person's older brother, let's say, died without children, he left the widow, and the Torah says there's a mitzvah on the surviving brother to marry the widow. That marriage is called yibum. And the Gemara explains what's unique about the Yibum marriage is that the Yavam, the man who's marrying this widow, the brother, does not have to be bar mitzvah. He doesn't have to be a legal adult. It's not, as we learn in the Mishnah in Nida. Mishnah says, Bentesha Shanim V'yom Echad, Shebal Yivimto. If a boy was 9 years old in one day, he's turned 9. Is Bal Yavimto, he performs the mitzvah of Yibum. He marries, he has a relationship with the widow of his deceased brother, Kana. Then he has acquired her. That act was effective in creating a binding Yibum marriage. The Mishnah says, Ve'ein nosen get that she gadel. However, this young boy will not be qualified to do a divorce, to give her a get, and end the Yibum marriage until he becomes a legal adult. So that's where it's relevant. In a case where a boy under 13 performed the mitzvah of Yibum, as long as he was at least 9. And subsequently, when he was already 13, he wanted to give her a get, he wanted to divorce her. Nachman and Mishmuel teaches, we'd have to first do a bedika and confirm that he has grown the two saras to ensure that he's a legal adult who's able to do a divorce. The Gemara now explains, and Rav Nachman and Mishmuel taught, that we do this bedika, we have to check for the saras, l'chalitza, with regards to performing the ceremony of chalitza. With this, Rav Nachman and Mishmuel teaches, lafuke mid Rabbi Yossi. Not like the opinion of Rabbi Yossi, the Omar, who said, Rabbi Yossi said, that since ish kasuv b'parsha, since the verse in the passage of chalitza mentions the word ish, so that tells us that the yavam in question, the brother who is participating in the ceremony of chalitza, he's going to remove the widow's shoe and then she spits. So he, the Torah is saying, has to be an ish. He has to be an adult. Aval isha ben gedolo ben ketana. However, the Torah implies, as far as the widow, the woman participating in the ceremony, it's not necessary that she be a legal adult. So that's what Rabbi Yossi taught. But since Rav Nachman and Shmuel simply says we need to be bodkin, we need to examine for the two saras for chalitza, he implies at Kamash Milan, he's teaching us that, in fact, in his opinion, the makshina ne'isha le'ish, we're actually supposed to compare the requirement on the man that he has to be an adult to the woman as well. She too must be an adult to perform in the midst of chalitza. So the lo ker b'yosi, Shmuel then is teaching here not like Rabbi Yossi. Now Shmuel also taught ulemiyunin that in the case of Miyun, this young girl was in a rabbinic marriage. She was under bas mitzvah when she got married. It was not through the father, so it was only a rabbinic marriage. And she has turned 12, and now she wants to do Miyun. She wants to refuse the husband and end the marriage. Shmuel said, it depends on the saras. If we examine and she has the two pubic hairs, then she's no longer qualified to end the marriage through Miyun. The Gemara points out that in teaching this halacha, Shmuel's coming le'afuke mid the Rebbe Yehuda. He's teaching here not like the opinion of Rebbe Yehuda, the Amar, who said, says this in Masechtas Nida, and actually Yirba Shachar. Yehuda says that she would not be considered an adult with respect to Miyun until the pubic hairs have grown significantly. The way he describes it is until it's mostly black. What it really means is till you have at least two pubic hairs that are long enough to lie along the surface of her skin. Then, at that point, she'd be disqualified from Miyun. So, Kamash Milan, the Loker of Yehuda. If Nachman Mishmuel is teaching, not like Rabbi Yehuda, that rather, as soon as there are two pubic hairs, they don't have to be a certain length, as soon as there's two pubic hairs there, she can no longer perform miyan. And finally, Rav Nachman and Rav Shmuel taught v'limchor b'nichse aviv at shiyehe b'nesrim, as far as doing real estate business with property inherited from the father, orphan's not allowed to do that until he turns 20. The Gemara says, la fuke miman diyamra ben shimon esrei. Shmuel here is teaching not like the opinion we learned yesterday of Rav Amar of Nachman, who said the minimum age here is 18. Shmuel teaches like Rav Huna bar Chinana that the minimum age is 20. The Gemara now rules on some other issues that we discussed yesterday. The Gemara says, v'hilchasa toch zman kilifnei zman. Says the Gemara, first of all, as far as the question of toch zman, meaning, let's say we have, assuming the minimum age is 20, we have this youth who is in his 20th year. We had a dispute about the halacha in that case. The Gemara now rules the halacha is that's still considered lifnezman, before the time, before the minimum age. So we can't start selling his father's properties yet. Furthermore, the Gemara rules v'hilchasa ki gidal mar benasha. Halacha is also like gidal mar benasha, who had sent the question to Rava, who answered that in fact we could make an exception to the halacha of the minimum age to sell the lands, and that is that if we see that clearly this youth is very intelligent and is smart enough, is responsible enough to go ahead and sell his father's lands, he knows how to do business properly with the father's properties, then we would make an exception and we would allow him to sell his father's land. Furthermore, the Gemara rules, v'hilchasok in Mar Zutra. The halach is also like Mar Zutra said yesterday, that we accept the testimony of a youth under 20 with respect to a case, if it's a monetary case. So in a case of metaltalim, if it involves movables, then we accept this testimony, but not if the testimony involves real estate, involves land. Because Rezutra argued, since this youth is not qualified to deal with the land in general, he's under 20, so therefore we don't accept his testimony about land either, but since he does have the right to sell metaltalim, if it's movables, he could sell that. Therefore, we accept his testimony with regards to metaltalim. So that is the halacha on that issue as well. Furthermore, the Gemara says, v'hilchasa ka'ameymar. The halacha is like Ameymar said yesterday, that although we have this rabbinic takana, this enactment that if the son is under 20, he can't start selling his father's land. However, Ameymar said he could give away his father's property as a gift. We explained the reason yesterday. We explained the whole concern there, but Hanir doesn't apply in the case of a gift. And finally, the Gemara says, V'hilchasa k'Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel b'kulhu. And we rule like all of Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel's teachings that we learned about today as far as checking for the two saras, the two pubic hairs, before we actually authorize these young people to be involved in a ceremony like Kiddushin, very serious ramifications. We have to make sure, in fact, the parties are legally adults. They're not only over Bar Bas Mitzvah, there's also the two Saras, they also have the two pubic hairs. Now, much of this parak has been all about the Shchiv Meira, the special halacha of a person who was seriously ill. We've seen many times how Shchiv Meira has his own set of rules in terms of gifting away his property, in that, you know, under the right conditions, if he merely says, I want the property to go to this other person, then it's transferred, even without any formal kinyan. And we also saw the recurring theme of Umdana, how even if he doesn't specifically say that I'm giving away my property because I'm about to die, how we might still, you know, presume that that's the reason for the gift, and therefore if he recovers, then it's not a gift. So basically, the gift of a seriously ill person has a special status and has different rules. That's what we've been accustomed to throughout this parak. However, we now learn a Mishnah that presents a different view and says, nope, Shchiv Meira, this ill person doesn't have a special status. He goes by the same rules that everybody else does in terms of the proper kinyan that has to be done in order to effect the gift, to actually transfer the property. Says the Mishnah, Mechalek Nechasav Al Piv, somebody who's expecting to die, is distributing all of his property, does so verbally. He says, oh, my property should go to this one and to that one. Rabbi Elazar says, Echad bari ve'echad mesuchan, whether he's a healthy person, even if he's dangerously ill, he cannot simply transfer the property through verbal instruction. Rather, the rule is like for everybody else. The nechasim sheyesh lan achrayis, if you're talking about land, then Niknin, Bekesef, Ubishtar, and Bechazaka. And as we learn about in Kiddushin, Kinyanim for land, the options are you could use something of value, Kesef, You give that thing over, and that symbolizes the transfer. Then the transfer goes through Ur, through a document. You could use the document itself as the instrument of the kinyan. You could transfer it through the document. They're handing over the document that records the transaction. Or there is chazaka, where the purchaser goes ahead and does something that only an owner would do in the property, and that symbolizes the transfer. So those would be your options if he's transferring land. V'shein lahen achrayas. If you're talking about movables, then ein niknin ella b'mishicha. Then you would not use the above kinyanim. Rather, you'd have to use something like mishicha. So if it's small enough, if you could pull it over, actually physically draw the thing toward yourself, whoever's purchasing it or receiving it, then that would be a kinyan for movables. There's other kinyanim you could use by movables. But the point is, Rabbi Elazar disagrees with the premise that we've been working with throughout the perek, that a shchiv meira, a seriously ill person, has different rules. Rabbi Elazar says, no, he doesn't. He has to use the regular kinyanim that anybody else would. Turning to Amid Beis, Gemara brings the Chachamim, who debate with Rabbi Elazar on this, Amrullah. The Chachamim said to Rabbi Elazar, we can prove that our assertion that Matna Shchimra does have a special status, he doesn't have to do a kinyan, that is true from the following story. Maisa be'iman shel b'nei Rochel. Once happened with the mother of b'nei Rochel, the sons of a man named Rochel. She was seriously ill. V'yamra tenu kvinasi libiti. And she said, let kvinasi, let my brooch, it's very expensive piece of jewelry, let that go to my daughter. The Mishnah says, v'hi b'shneim aser mana, this piece of jewelry was worth 12 mana. She didn't do any kinyan. She didn't do a regular act of a kinyan that's normally required. She just said, Vinasi should go to my daughter. Umesa, and then she died. The Chachamim say, what happened? Case came before the sages. Vikiyam was tvoreha. And the Rabbanan there in that case fulfilled her words. They said, the brooch is transferred to the daughter. So the Chachamim say, we have a clear proof from this story that the accepted ruling is then indeed, by a shchimer, if the person is seriously ill, the Rabbanan waived the requirement for the kinyan, and the object, whatever is being given away, is simply transferred through the shchimer's verbal instruction. Now, if this was the only possession the mother had, then it's readily understandable, because the halacha is if the shchimer gives away everything, then this halacha applies, according to the Chachamim, that it's transferred simply through the verbal instruction. But if we say that this wasn't her only possession, we would have to say that she made it clear that she is giving this away because she fears that she's going to die. So then clearly the instruction is machmas misa. And if the benefactor clearly connected the gift with the benefactor's expectation of dying, then once again the halacha is that it's transferred simply through verbal instruction. Even though the person didn't give away everything, but since the person made that connection explicit, so Matna Shchimra, this special law, applies. They said, you see from the story that we're right, that Shchimra does have a special status. But Rabbi Elazar rejected the proof out of hand. Amar lehen, he said to the Chachamim, that story, that doesn't prove anything. For B'nei Rochel, tik bereim iman. The sons of Rochel, those are wicked people. Those are bad people, therefore let their mother bury them. And Rabbi Elazar means here, he says, it wasn't that the Chachamim were going through the normal system. Normally, they would not have recognized the transfer if it was just through a verbal instruction. Normally, that's not good enough. But the Chachamim, in that case, decided to make a knas, they decided to make a penalty on the sons of Rochel, and to accept the kinyan. In this particular case, they said, we're going to recognize the mother's verbal instruction, and we're going to consider that brooch as the property of the daughter. It should not go to these sons, because the sons were openly violating the halacha. The Gemara will explain what their misbehavior was. So it was a special knas in that case, and so obviously you can't bring any proof from that story. The Gemara begins with a brisa, in which Rabbi Elazar brings a story to prove his position. Tanya. Says in the brisa, Amar lehen, Rabbi Elazar, they changed it to Rabbi Elazar, l'chachamim. Rabbi Elazar said to the chachamim, Maisa, once happened, b'meiruni echad shehoya b'Yerushalayim. This Meruni from Meron was in Yerushalayim. V'hayulo mitaltel in harbe ubikesh litna b'matana. This person had a lot of possessions and he wanted to gift his possessions away to various people. So he came to the Rabbanan there in Yerushalayim for advice as to how he should accomplish these kinyanim. How exactly should he transfer the vast amounts of mitaltelim to these different individuals? Amrullah the Rabbanan advised him as follows: Ein lam takanach yaknel gav karka. The Rabbanan there suggested that to utilize the kinyan agav. Kinyan agav means that you can transfer a whole bunch of metaltalim agav along with some land. Just do a transfer with land. You're giving even a small amount of land. Once you're transferring land through the conventional kinyanim that you use to transfer the land, you could transfer the movables along with the land. So that's how they suggested that this Miruni go ahead and make the transfer and gift these different metaltalim. So he did so. So halach v'lakach beit sela echad samach liYerushalayim. He therefore went and purchased for himself this small little rocky area next to Yerushalayim. And then v'yomar, he said, tzfono l'ploni, the north side of this little plot of rocky land should go to so-and-so, v'imo, and along with that little parcel of land, me'at sonu me'at chavis, should be transferred 100 sheep and 100 barrels, I guess, of wine, udaroma l'ploni, and the southern side of this little parcel should go to so-and-so, v'imo, me'at sonu me'at chavis, and him also, along with this other part, you should do a kinyan agav, along with that, he should get 100 sheep and 100 barrels. Umeis. And then he died. V'kiyamu chachamim es devarav. The chachamim fulfilled his word. Since he had followed their advice, he had done a valid kinyan agav to transfer the metaltalim. Therefore, the Rabbanan upheld the kinyan, and the property was recognized now to be the property of these recipients. So Rabbi Elazar is pointing out that the Rabbanan did not tell this person that it's fine. You could just say that the property should be transferred to those people, and that's good enough. Now, Rabbi Elazar assumes that he was a shchemira, he's probably ill, because some short time after this he died. So we see that a shchemira doesn't have any special status. He can't simply transfer the property through his verbal instruction. So that proves my opinion. Amrullah, the chachamim responded to Rabbi Elazar, Misham Raya, from there it's a proof. That's not a proof. We say that Meiruni Bari Haya. Our understanding of the story was that this Meiruni person was a healthy person. At the time, he wanted to give these gifts. So, of course, the Rabbanan told them, you have to do a kinyan agav, let's say. Because everyone agrees that if the person is perfectly healthy, he has to use the regular conventional kinyanim. Rabbi Elazar said this strong language, he said, as far as the story presented in the Mishnah of the mother who, before death, wished the brooch to go to her daughter, and the chachamim were mekayim her wish, even though it was only a verbal instruction. So the Chacham said, look, that proves that Shchemira does have a special status, to which Rabbi Elazar said back, B'nei Rochel tikbereim iman, sons of Rochel, that's not a proof. The reason why they didn't receive the brooch was the Rabbanan were penalizing them. It was a special knas the Rabbanan were imposing on them, to seize that brooch, to find some reason to take that away from them and give it to the daughter. So the Gemara asks, "My time of kalayit lehu? Why does Rabbi Elazar curse them so? What was their crime? What was their violation?" Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Rav Yehuda said the name of Shmuel. They were deserving of this curse because mikayme kotzim bekerem hayu. They were growing thorns along with their vineyard. It was mixed together in the vineyard, which, in Rabbi Elazar's opinion, the Gemara will explain, is a violation of the prohibition of kalayim, that you can't have certain mixtures of plants. And particularly if it's a vineyard with other foreign plants, it's a big problem. And the whole thing becomes prohibited for benefit. You have to burn it. So they were openly violating the laws of Kalayim, and therefore they were deserving of Rabbi Elazar's curse. And the Gemara explains further, Rabbi Elazar l'taymei. Rabbi Elazar is consistent with his opinion he expressed elsewhere, the Tnan. So it says in the Mishnah, Kalayim, Hamakayim kotzim bekerem. Somebody is growing thorns and thistles in his vineyard. Rabbi, they change it to Rabbi Elazar Omer Kodash. Rabbi Elazar says, just like any other case of a forbidden mixture of Kalayim here too, this mixture is Kodash. It causes the whole thing to be completely prohibited for benefit. But v'chachamim omrim, chum say, no. Chum say, lo Kodash, eladavar shekamohu mekayimin. Chumim argue that the issur of Kalayim does not apply unless you're dealing with a foreign plant that people in the world, people in general, grow such a thing, they keep such a crop. Chum say most people do not at all maintain thorns. They don't grow that. There's usually no real purpose for growing that. And so the Torah implies that Kalayim only applies to things that are, you know, normally grown, normally cultivated. So the issur of Kalayim does not apply here, the Chachamim argue. Now, apparently, Rabbi Elazar maintains that no, it's not so abnormal, it's not so outlandish to grow these kotzim, and therefore it is a problem of klayim. So the Gemara wonders, you know, how that makes sense. Bishlam a karkum chazi. Bishlam, I understand something like, let's say, karkum, crocus. Even that's something fine. We can understand people would keep such a thing. A lakotzim, lamai chazi. Thorns, what's that fit for? Why would anybody grow that? So how do we understand a Belazar's view that, no, this is considered within the realm of normal, and therefore the Isser of Klaim does apply? How do we understand this? Rabbi Chanin explains, my time, but Rabbi Elazar, what's Rabbi Elazar's reason here? He argues, Shekein ba'aravia mekaimin kotzim besados ligamalehen. In Arabia, they do grow these thorns, these thistles, and they use it to feed their camels. So since somewhere in the world, people do maintain, they do actively grow the thistles, therefore, anywhere in the world, if one goes ahead and grows that with the vineyard, that's going to be an Isser of Klaim. The Chachamim say back that just because somewhere in the world, in Arabia, it's normal to grow the kotzim for the animals, that does not govern the halacha in this region of the world. If in this region of the world, people don't normally cultivate the crop in question, it's not going to be a problem of Klaim. The Gemara now brings a teaching about the gift of a seriously ill person. Amar Rabbi Levi, Rabbi Levi said, Konin kinyan meshchiv meira afilu b'shabbos. We allow a seriously ill person to even perform a kinyan. Do, let's say, a kinyan sudr. He picks up a kerchief to signify that he's transferring his gift to whatever recipient he names. We may do that even on Shabbos. Now, Rabbi Levi is referring to this seriously ill person doing a regular kinyan that anybody else would have to perform in order to transfer property. So Rabbi Levi says, make no mistake about what I'm saying here in terms of using a regular active kinyan. V'lo lachush l'divi Rabbi Elazar. I'm not saying that the halacha is concerned with Rabbi Elazar's opinion that even an ill person is required to perform a kinyan. I'm not saying he has to do a regular kinyan. Ella shema tichav daitala. Rather, my point is that we allow him to do a kinyan. If it makes him feel better to do an actual kinyan, even if it's Shabbos, we allow him to do that, lest he become agitated if he doesn't feel like his transfer is actually going through and might hasten his death. Therefore, he can go ahead and do a kinyan, even if it's Shabbos, even though the Rabbanan enacted many rules that a person shouldn't do any activity, even if it appears like commercial activity. Nevertheless, in the case of a Shechiv Meirah, we set that aside. The Rabbanan are lenient. They say he could do the Kinyan, for otherwise, Shema Tichav Daitala, maybe he's going to get distressed if he doesn't feel like the transfer is going through, so it's allowed, even on Shabbos. The next Mishnah begins with a third view on the matter of gift of a seriously ill person. Rabbi Eliezer, not to be confused with Rabbi Elazar of the previous Mishnah, who completely rejected the notion of a Shechiv Meirah bypassing a regular kinyan to transfer the property. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, B'Shabbos Dvarav Kayamin, if a Shechiv Meirah wants to gift away his possessions on Shabbos, then Dvarav, his words alone, will be sufficient to transfer that property. B'Pnei She'ein Yochel Lichtov, because on Shabbos he has no alternative. He can't do a kinyan. He certainly can't, you know, write down a document that he's transferring the property. So Rabbi Eliezer understands that specifically on Shabbos the Rabbanan issued a leniency for the Shechiv Meirah that he may transfer the property simply through his oral instruction. Avalo b'chol, but not during the weekday. Rabbi Eliezer says during the weekday, since Shechiv Meirah has the option of doing a regular conventional kinyan, that's what he must do. So says Rabbi Eliezer. But the Mishnah brings a Rabbi Yeshua. Omer Rabbi Yeshua says, "B'Shabbos Amru." If the Rabbanan said that a Shechiv Meirah may gift away his properties through oral instruction, even on Shabbos, Kal v'chomer b'chol, then certainly the Shechiv Meirah may do the transfer on the weekday. Rabbi Yeshua's argument is that it's actually more surprising that the words of a Shechiv Meirah work to transfer property on Shabbos, a day when you're normally not allowed to transfer things. And yet, the Rabbanan said, no, by the Shechiv Meirah, even if it's Shabbos, he can transfer his property. So Yeshua says, certainly that works on the weekday. We're on the weekday. Anybody's allowed to transfer property. So in other words, the basic concept of transferring things is obviously fully applicable on the weekday. So of course, it's easy to understand. There's certainly the Shechiv Meirah's words, we can understand the Rabbanan would say that those should enable the transfer on the weekday. So Yeshua feels that the logic goes the other way. And the bottom line is that Yeshua holds, like, you know, we're accustomed to understanding that Shechid Meirah may transfer his properties 7 days a week through his words. The Mishnah notes, Kiyotze Bo, was a similar argument between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer regarding a totally different halacha. That is, the first opinion said, the halacha is Zachin Likatan. There is a system of Zechia, means that person A picks up, you know, there's an act of Akinyan on behalf of person B, even though person B did not make A his Shaliach. But A, of his own volition, does a kinyan for B, that potentially could acquire that object for B. Says this first opinion, we'll see as Rabbi Eliezer, that system works if it's being acquired on behalf of a minor, v'ein zach in legadol, but not on behalf of an adult who is able to do the kinyan on his own. By a minor, we understand he can't do a kinyan. So we understand the Rabbanim made a system of zechia that somebody else could acquire for that minor. But regarding an adult, the adult can do the kinyan himself, so it wasn't necessary for the Rabbanan to enact that A can do zechiyah for adult B. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer, these are the words of Rabbi Eliezer. What Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Likatan Amru, if the Chachamim said that zechiyah, acquiring on behalf of even a minor is possible, even though the minor himself simply cannot do a kinyan, then Kavah Chomer Legadol. Certainly, logic says that zechiyah works by an adult, who of course is part of the system of kinyan, is able to appoint an agent to do a kinyan for him. So it's more understandable in the case of an adult that the Rabbanan said, just like the adult can appoint an agent to acquire for him, even if this person was a self-appointed agent, if A decided to do the acquisition for B, and that would work as well. Yeshua feels the logic goes in that direction. So we see it's like a similar debate as they had by the Shchimer on the question of Shabbos or the weekday. The Gemara tells us that there was actually a Tanaic dispute about what the Tanaic dispute between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua actually was. The Gemara explains, Masnisin Mani, in presenting the dispute between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua the way it does, which Tanaic position is our Mishnah going like? Gemara says, Rabbi Yehudahi. Our Mishnah clearly follows the understanding of Rabbi Yehuda, the way he understands the dispute between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. The Tanya, for we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Meir Omer. Rabbi Meir said, this was the dispute between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Eliezer Omer. Eliezer said, Bechol Devarav Kayamet. In this version, Rabbi Eliezer says, specifically on the weekday, a seriously ill person can transfer his property simply through a verbal instruction. Why? We can understand such an extension because he does have the basic power on the weekday to do a regular kinyan, to write away his properties, to do a regular kinyan. So the Rabbanan extend from that a little bit and they say he can even do it through his verbal instruction because we don't want him to have undue distress. Of a low b'Shabbos, but this was never enacted in the case he can't do this, he can't through his words transfer his property on Shabbos, since there is no system at all of kinyan on Shabbos. So if you can't do a regular kinyan, you can't do the specialized kinyan by Shchemira, that he could transfer property through his words. That's Rabbi Meir's version of Rabbi Eliezer. And Rabbi Yeshua, continuing to Kuf Nun Zayin Amin Aleph, Omer, Rabbi Yeshua says that not true. Bechol Omru, the Rabbanan said, the Shchemira may transfer his property during the weekday, and if that's true, and certainly included in that enactment is that he may do that on Shabbos. Meaning that in Rabbi Meir's version, Rabbi Yeshua argues that if the Rabbanan accommodated his Shchimra, even on the weekday, even though technically he could do a regular or conventional kinyan, and yet the Rabbanan wanted to make things more convenient for him, so they said he could do the transfer through his words, then certainly this enactment applies to Shabbos where he has no other option. Certainly there, the Rabbanim were concerned that Shem Etitshuv Dayt, that we don't have to get distressed. So they said he could transfer the property through his words. That's really the halacha. Now it ends up in the same place as Rabbi Yeshua in our Mishnah, just that he's saying the logic goes the other way. If the Rabbanim accommodated him for the weekday, then certainly the takana applies for Shabbos. And Rameer's version continues, Kiyotzibo. Similarly, they debated the extent of the Rabbanan's enactment of Zechia, that person A can acquire for person B, even though person A was not made agent of person B. this version, we begin with Rabbi Eliezer's view that Zachin legadol, if person B is an adult, then the Rabbanan said person A can simply acquire on person B's behalf. Ein Zachin lekatan, and this version of Rabbi Eliezer says it doesn't work if person B is a minor, since minors are not part of the system of kinyan, or of making an agent. Therefore, there's nothing to go on. So the system of Zachia is inapplicable if the recipient, person B, is a minor. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. These are the words of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Yeshua says, though, Begadol amru, the Rabbanan said, even where person B is an adult, person A can simply acquire on his behalf. He can be zocha for person B. Even though person B is an adult, is able to do it on his own. And still they said, if it's more convenient, person A can be zocha for person B. Then kava chomer lekatan. And certainly the Rabbanan applied this enactment where the recipient is a minor, where he's not even able to do it for himself. So of course then, the takana should apply, that one is able to acquire on the minor's behalf. So that's Rabbi Meir's version of the dispute of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Then the Braisa continues, Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, this is the actual dispute of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Eliezer said, B'Shabbos Devar V'Kayamin, although the Rabbanan said the Shechimera can transfer his property through his mere words on Shabbos, but that's because mipnei she'enu yochel lichtov. That's because he has no other option. He's not able to, let's say, write down the kinyan on Shabbos. Avalo bechol. But the Rabbanan never enacted this for the weekday where he's able to do a regular conventional kinyan. So on the weekday, Shechimera may not transfer his property through his words. So says Rabbi Eliezer according to Rabbi Yehuda. However, Rabbi Yoshua Omer, Shabbos Amru, if the Rabbanan said the Shechimera may transfer the property through his words even on Shabbos, even though there's no system of kinyan on Shabbos, Kal v'chomer b'chol. And certainly it works in the weekday, where, of course, there's a system of kinyan, so there's something to go on. So it's easier to understand this extension for the Shechimera that he may transfer through his words. So the Divrei Shechimera transfer the property 7 days a week. And similarly, they debated about the question of Zechiah. That again, Rabbi Eliezer says, Zachin lekatan, Zachin legadol. The system of the idea that you can acquire on behalf of somebody else was only said where you're trying to do it for a minor who can't acquire on his own, but not by an adult who could acquire on his own. Rabbi Eliezer, this was Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua says, no, lekatan, armu kavachom legadol. If they said the halach of Zechiah by even a minor, even though the minor is not part of the basic system of kinyan, of making an agent to acquire for him, he's not part of that whole system, and yet the Rabbanan created this whole halacha that you could do zechiyah. Zechiyah works even by a katan, and certainly it works by a gadol, who is already part of the basic system. So then they're just extending a little bit and saying that even if this adult doesn't specifically appoint this person his agent to do the kinyan, if person A does the kinyan for person B, if it's a case where it's presumable that person B would want this thing, then that kinyan certainly works in that case. So it's clear that our Mishnah follows Rabbi Yehuda's version of the dispute between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua.
You've been listening to RealClearDaf.com. Visit us online for resources or to dedicate a shiur. To speak with Rabbi Wise, call 855-ASK-RCD1. That's 855-275-7231.